Eurocontrol. Aviation Straight Talk. Live.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. I'm Andrew Charlton. Welcome to another Eurocontrol Aviation Straight Talk Live. Today, I'm delighted to say that we are having a chat with Mr. Michael O'Leary, the CEO of the Ryanair Group, of course, a man who frankly needs no introduction, despite the fact that I just gave him one. We're going to talk about all those things that everyone's talking about at the moment, sustainability, charges, fares, things like that. Welcome back to Straight Talk. Great to have you.
It's great to be back on Straight Talk, Andrew. Nice to see you.
Indeed. So, Michael, Eamon's telling us that Ryanair's back at about 104% of its pre-pandemic capacity. How's it going?
I mean, we're back. Volumes have up until last week, and when I sit here on Monday, the 21st or 22nd of November, up until last weekend, things were going great. Volumes are back. I think we're back running at about 100% of our pre-COVID flight volumes. Pricing is down. I mean, we're, you know, undoubtedly we're incentivizing people to return to flying. I think our average pricing in the half year to the end of September was down about 30%. But nevertheless, you can see clear recovery and a run into Christmas. It has been disrupted, however, last week by the Austrian lockdown. You know, there's a kind of renewed concern across Europe about a fourth or fifth wave of COVID. Austria is locking down. Holland is locking down. The Germans are getting nervous. And so I think we're in for a fraught period between now and Christmas where, you know, it looks like Europe is going to get very nervous again at the worst time of the year when people are making their Christmas travel plans.
Are you getting nervous about that? Do you think that's a
I think we've no choice, in a way. I think people are, given the kind of coverage this weekend, there's now, you know, I think we've done great work as an industry across Europe at restoring confidence. Particularly the October school midterm break was a very strong period for most of the of intra-EU air travel. But now I think we're going to unsettle people. We're going to undermine confidence, despite the high levels of vaccination across Europe. I think it's inevitable that we'll undermine confidence between now and Christmas, and that will disrupt Christmas, and it'll also, I think, unsettle people between Christmas and New Year when they would normally start booking their summer holidays.
Your strategy has very much been low fare, low fare, low fare to try to bring people back onto the aeroplanes. You're lucky enough to be able to do that, aren't you, because you're in a very solid place financially. But a lot of your competitors aren't looking so solid financially. So what are they going to have to do?
I disagree. I mean, a lot of my competitors look very solid financially because they've received multi-billions of injections of state aid. I mean, Lufthansa has received nearly 12 billion, Air France KLM close to 15 billion. Alitalia, despite the fact it's gone bankrupt again, has got about 3 billion in state aid. Even TAP, an airline that carries only 14 million passengers, is about to get 3.5 billion from the Portuguese taxpayer, about 350 euros for every man, woman and child in Portugal. So I think those airlines having received state aid are in a reasonably strong financial position, but they're reluctant to restore flying. We think, now we have the benefit of being essentially an intra-EU operator. There is huge pent-up demand coming out of COVID. I mean, people who've been locked up for 18 months want to go and visit friends and family. Certainly we see small businesses getting back on the road. They're trying to repair and restore supply chains that can no longer be dependent on China. We see lots of people travelling to Portugal, to Eastern Europe, trying to restore supply chains or intra-EU supply chains. We think that will continue, but it's critical that Europe continues to uphold the digital COVID certificate. It has been one of the great developments during COVID. The EU has had a huge success in its hands with the digital COVID cert, which was issued on the 1st of July. We need booster jabs, though, to keep people, kind of vaccinated people, up to date with their vaccines. And I, what I worry about things like Austria locking down is, you know, there's no sense to it. You know, they started off by locking down unvaccinated people, and we asked, what did that mean? Well, it meant that unvaccinated people could still go to work, go to school, go to supermarket. Well, what couldn't they do? It seems to be just basically couldn't go to nightclubs or restaurants. Now they've locked down vaccinated people. Like, why are you locking down vaccinated people when there's really no medical risk to fully vaccinated people? So I think governments are panicking. I think they're under pressure from the media. And I think we need to kind of be, you know, cool heads. I think we have to continue to uphold the freedom of movement, certainly within the European Union, and allowing people who are vaccinated to go to work and to travel.
Do you see a sort of a return to nationalism? You know, people, countries putting up their own borders, countries behaving separately or differently to each other?
I don't think so, but I mean, I think countries will panic. I mean, I've no doubt in my mind the Austrians have panicked. You know, if you need restrictions, the restrictions should be imposed on non-vaccinated people. I really struggle to understand how you can restrict somebody who's been vaccinated. And I think we run the danger of more of those kind of, you know, ultimately non-medical, non-scientific based restrictions. Do I see a return to U.S. borders? No, I don't. Brexit has been a disaster, as we predicted it would be. And I think, you know, travel to and from the UK has become much more friction, much more
fueled.
friction fueled, exactly. And that is a challenge, both for EU citizens travelling to the UK and for UK citizens travelling to Europe. And I don't think anybody wants to see that extended.
No, right, I'm sure. Just to come back to what you were saying about the legacy carriers that had received all this state aid, but yet they're not jumping into the pond as enthusiastically as Ryanair, as Wizz and the other low-cost carriers. Where do we go from here? What does European aviation look like a year from now, 2 years from now?
I mean, the difficulty is it's all dependent upon, are we out of COVID or not out of COVID? I mean, you know, up until last weekend, I think you could see a clear path to transatlantic travel was restored in mid-November. I think there's a danger that might go backwards again. The US administration is very jumpy about case numbers. They don't spend a lot of time analysing vaccinations, which is what they should be doing. Asia, I think, would be a much slower recovery. And the challenge
you ought
for
to come from Australia,
precisely. And the challenge for the European airlines is, you know, that typically 50-60% of their short haul traffic is connecting from or to a long haul flight. If you don't have the long haul flights, you know, there's a real challenge as to whether they can fill the short haul flights. And that's why they've had, you know, the slot waiver system for the last 2 years. Now, I think the slot waiver system is manifestly unfair. If airports are being disadvantaged by it, consumers are being disadvantaged by it, you know, the airlines should operate their short-haul flights and they shouldn't have the luxury of being able to sit their short-haul flights on the ground just because you don't have long-haul passengers to come and fill them.
Right, but so do you think the legacy carriers are holding back on the short-haul stuff in the desperate hope that they can get back to long-haul? Should they be trying to come into your market and compete with you?
Yeah. I mean, they should be. They should have an. They should have an obligation to use the slots or lose them. I mean, I can see a reason why you would say those are long, identifiably long haul slots, right? We'll protect the long haul slots because clearly the Asians are not going to travel next summer. The transatlantic might get disrupted, but there's no argument for allowing them to not use short haul slots and yet protect them. I mean, this is manifestly anti-competitive. It's not in the consumer interest. And if for a year or two they're all forced to fly their short-haul flights, even if they're all flying to Malaga, at least we bring down the cost of travel for Europe citizens going to Malaga or to the Greek islands or the Spanish islands or wherever else there is. But the idea that, as has always been the case during COVID, the legacy airlines get, we break the state aid rules, we break the slot rules, we break the competition rules. You hear Lufthansa and Air France talk about being national champions. I mean, national champions of what? Well, you know, overcharging consumers.
But, well, national champions. But you must be the national champion of Ireland, surely.
Oh, I bloody doubt it.
Really? Why do you say that?
We don't want to be the national champion of anywhere. I mean, we're the largest airline in most EU countries in which we operate.
Are you not the national champion of Italy? I mean, you're the largest carrier in Italy by a long way.
We are, but I mean, I don't expect protection in Italy because we happen to be the largest carrier. We're the largest carrier because we deliver the best services at the lowest prices. And you've Alitalia, which has lost money for 74 years in a row, has now gone bankrupt for the 15th time in the last 30 years and will reemerge chrysalis-like as ITA, which will again lose money for another 5 or 10 years.
But it's got a new logo.
And that's true, and they'll probably spend millions getting new uniforms designed as well, as if the uniforms were the problem with Alitalia. We have to have a much, you know, we need Europe. This is a single market. And yet, you know, the single market has been dysfunctional during COVID. And we need to get back to have a functioning single market where deregulation of intra-EU air travel becomes the kind of central policy of the Commission again.
So just to come back, though, onto the point I made earlier about your pushing charges down to try to stimulate the traffic, if you like. I heard you speaking at the Eurocontrol Sustainability Summit yesterday, and you were saying there that an important part of your strategy is to have as many passengers as possible because then on a per-head basis their emissions go down and therefore you're trying to price as aggressively as you can. Is that a fair summary?
I think it is. You know, I mean, we have this ridiculous environmental taxation system in Europe of ETS, which exempts all the long-haul carriers who account for 56% of European aviation CO2 emissions. So we exempt the most polluting airlines But we then transferred the entire burden of taxation on the most efficient, which is the low-cost carriers with new technology aircraft, who carry only European citizens.
Indeed.
So we exempt the Chinese, the Americans, and the Asians, and then we double tax European citizens.
So how do we tax the Chinese, the Asians, and the Americans?
I think it has to be at the point of, you know, it has to be a fuel tax or at the point of uplift at European airports. So everybody pays, you know, the same tax on uplifting aviation fuel. But
regardless of destination.
Regardless of destination. Mm. Now, there's something that can be done. But in return for that, you've got to get back these environmental taxes, APD, ETS, all those other taxes that have been massively and unfairly burdened on just Europe's citizens. We are making European air travel less and less competitive with environmental taxes that are only applied to intra-EU air travel, while we exempt all the non-Europeans who can fly in and out, create most of the emissions, and yet pay no contribution towards their environmental footprint in Europe.
So, I mean, this is breaking news, isn't it? Ryanair approves a tax, isn't that?
I think we all have a burden, we all have a duty, to, I think, A, reduce our carbon footprint, and B, that there's a level or a level playing field for carbon taxation on air travel across Europe. We don't have that level playing field at the moment because we exempt all the non-Europeans on the long haul on this pretext of a level playing field, where then we distort the level playing field by double and triple taxing EU citizens going on their business on an intra-EU basis. And I think the real challenge, you look at the trauma of Brexit. You know, we've seen the UK leave the European Union. I mean, one of the real challenges facing Europe is how do we kind of keep the peripheral countries and states, you know, united or tied to the centre. And one of the key ways is, you know, low-cost air travel. Mm. We can't have these. It's fine for Mr. Tillemans, who's Dutch, to be proposing all these environmental taxation, environmental taxes on aviation. Of course, the Dutch scheme largely exempts KLM's connecting traffic across Schiphol. So in typical Dutch fashion, it's do what we say, just don't do what we do. But the threat to the people who live in Ireland, in Cyprus, in Malta, in the Balearics, in the Canaries, of these environmental taxation, we don't have an alternative. Mm. I don't have a train or any other way of getting to Brussels from Ireland except to fly. And we cannot be taxing the peripheral states of Europe just so that you can keep the Dutch happy while they exempt KLM and all KLM's connecting traffic over Schiphol from any environmental taxation.
So a lot of that, I mean, the connecting traffic is short haul before it becomes long haul.
Yeah.
Everything you say is right, I think. Everything you say is right. But I just can see massive political arguments about trying to impose a tax. The Chinese will squeal, the Americans will squeal, this will be, you know.
Let them squeal.
So what?
You want to lift? You want to uplift aviation fuel at Europe's airports? There's the tax.
Yeah, right.
At least then everybody's paying their fair share. Mm. There's no argument for we uplift tax on short-haul flights that pay a disproportionate environmental tax. And yet the long-haul flights, who account for more than 50% of Europe's CO2 emissions, are completely exempt. You know, everybody, I think, across Europe would accept that everybody must pay a fair share. But the richest people travelling long-haul get an exemption, while the poor people travelling intra-EU on short-haul flights pay all the burden. That's manifestly unfair.
Is SAFs the answer going forward, do you think?
I think SAFs have a significant role to play. There isn't one simple answer. If there was a simple answer, we'd all implement the simple answer. I mean, Ryanair's investing more than up to $20 billion in new technology aircraft for the next 5 years. You know, the new MAX game changer aircraft carries 4% more seats, burns 16% less fuel, reduces noise emissions by 40%. So new technology, I think, is the most critical role. SAFs undoubtedly could play a significant role. But to get SAFs, the challenge with SAFs is we need it in large volumes at Europe's airports. And that's not going to happen, I think, without European governmental support. You know, if you're and Ryanair paid €630 million in environmental taxation in the last year in 2019 pre-COVID, not one penny of that environmental taxation was spent on the environment. Mm. We would call on European governments, use that money to research, develop, produce sustainable aviation fuels in large quantities and make it available at airports so that actually it does become a realistic choice. It's not available at the moment.
So we're getting to that chicken and egg thing, aren't we? Is the way the Commission and Europe generally does that is to mandate the fuel and to provide a, you know, a, The fuel producers say we can produce a SAF. What we need is a sensible regulatory framework that we can rely on. And yet, Willie Walsh at IATA, for example, is saying it's madness to create a mandate until such time as you got the fuel. I mean, which comes first in that?
Look, my humble view, the supply comes first. You know, there's no point in mandating unless you can deliver a supply there. And the challenge is that the fuel companies say lots of things. Mm. They don't have and are not able to produce SAFs in sufficient quantities to do anything other than the occasional PR flight.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's reasonable for us as an industry to have a goal. I mean, Europe says a goal of 5% SAFs by 2030. We've set ourselves a goal of 12.5%. I don't think I'll get to 12.5%, but at least if I set a goal.
But that'll be a supply issue, you think?
It'll be a supply issue. I mean, the challenge there, you know, I mean, I spend about $2 billion a year on fuel. You know, can I generate or can I take delivery of 200, 250 million worth of SAFs? No, it doesn't exist at the moment at most of my airports. I need that at 240 EU airports.
Yeah.
Most airports aren't even geared up for delivering SAFs.
Well, indeed. And those that are, of course, have to put it into the fuel hydrants and then it doesn't actually make it to the aeroplane, even though you purchased it. But that's another issue. So coming back, though, to your perhaps the smart way to do it. Well, no, two questions. First, the SAFs are going to be, for the foreseeable future, more expensive, aren't they?
Yeah.
Even as fuel price, you know, current Jet 01 goes up. Is that a sort of a de facto tax?
I think it is a de facto tax, but it's all, I mean, I would live with that. I think my customers would live with that. But the challenge is that's where governments need to play a role. Governments need to take the environmental taxes that they're taking from airlines. And in my case, that was 630 million the last year pre-COVID, which was about €4.30 per passenger. I mean, about a 10% rate of tax on my average airfare of €40. So the money is there. But what governments need to do is to take that money and either subsidise the cost of SAFs or use it to help increase the production and the volume production in scalable volumes of SAFs and deliver it at Europe's at their airports.
Mm. So moving sort of on, but at the same time, one of the ways in which you're going to get aeroplanes full again, of course, is to keep your costs right down. So very bravely, I'm going to ask you about charges. Mm. Do you think that the ANSPs, for example, should have been able to do what they did? I mean, wasn't that exactly the regulatory framework the airlines demanded? And now that it's turned out to go over the line, all of a sudden they're crying foul?
I mean, you know, nobody envisaged a COVID, nobody envisaged a COVID pandemic, which would have grounded the airlines for 18 months. I mean, what we wanted was, a regulatory environment where you'd get kind of exposed ANSP costs. Now, I take you look at the last 18 months of COVID. The EU, rightly or wrongly, said, fine, the airlines were not allowing you to fly. But by the way, you have to compensate or refund all of your passengers, despite the fact 90% of them paid a non-refundable airfare. You must compensate all those passengers, give them full refunds. Fine, we understand that. That's what we'll do. But then they come along and say, oh, but by the way, you must now pay the ANSP charges for the last 18 months, despite the fact that you didn't use those ANSP services. Mm. You have to subsidise them as well because they're government-protected government monopolies. Now, something's wrong there. Mm. We can't, on the one hand, be asked to subsidise these government monopoly providers of ANSP services, whose services we didn't use, and then with no revenues because we've had to refund all of our passengers for the 18 months of flights which were cancelled by European governments. I mean, in my view, European governments should have compensated the airlines for those losses and costs. But of course, no, they're all very happy to make the airlines the kind of insurer of last resort. And what they do then is you have this circular system where the legacy airlines get billions of state aid to help them pick up those costs. But the non-legacy airlines, the Ryanairs, the EasyJets, I would say BA and others, receive no such money. And yet we're expected to fund those kind of costs. It's manifestly unfair. The level playing field has been destroyed in Europe in the last, I think, 2 or 3 years because of the massive quantities of state aid that have been handed out unnecessarily to Lufthansa, Air France, Alitalia, TAP. And yet we're all treated the same when it comes to we all now have to compete with those guys who have received more in state aid than we will generate in revenues for the next 2 or 3 years.
And I presume the same is true of the airports as well and the airport charges.
Well, but to be fair to the airports, I mean, you know, we didn't fly, so the airports don't get paid.
Mm.
You know, but you have kind of airports, you know, I have no axe to grind, airports like Heathrow, you know, who during the COVID pandemic paid out a dividend of 120 million to their shareholders, which is generally rich pension funds and the Sultan of Brunei or Qatar. And then they come back post-COVID and say, we want a 50% price increase. You know, for what? Oh, because our shareholders deserve to be rewarded for the risky investment of owning Heathrow. Like, it's manifest nonsense.
So how do we get to a place where we share the risk?
We will never get to a place where we share the risk, but we do need to get to a place where you have much more effective regulation in Europe. Deregulation of the airlines has worked, has been one of the great transformational, economic policies of the European Union. But we failed to go forward and deregulate the airports and deregulate ANSP providers. Mm. And I think we need, that's where we need to go next. Deregulate the airports. You know, we have this regulation, certainly in the UK, where Heathrow is protected come what may. ADP protected come what may. You know, we should be deregulated. There should be a much more aggressive regulation of their charges. And you stop them building marble palaces or marble cathedrals where they just pass the costs on to the consumer. And when it comes to ANSPs, let's accept that the single European sky has been a complete shambolic failure in Europe for the last 25 years. It has gone nowhere. It will never go anywhere. We no longer need ANSP services.
No.
You know, and I think what we should do is deregulate the ANSP services. Frankly, I can get my flight services from Flight Tracker, right? You can buy them on a website. All the airlines or aircraft are fitted with collision avoidance systems anyway. Now, we don't want to eliminate ATC services altogether. They do have a role. But frankly, the Belgian air traffic control system can provide ATC services over France. The Irish can provide it over Spain. Let them all compete against each other. Mm. And that way, by introducing competition for those services, you would actually significantly lower the cost of providing those services and significantly improve the production or the delivery of the service.
Music to my ears, of course. So my last question, just to come back, if I may, to the sustainability point. I seem to remember from your speaking yesterday, you offer your passengers an offset system. You're offering your passengers incredibly cheap fares. A colleague of mine flew from Manchester yesterday for £4.99.
Yeah.
And yet when you offer your passengers an offset scheme of their own, the uplift seems to be fairly poor.
Yeah, look, I think that's to be expected. People want low-fare air travel. And people want somebody else to pay the environmental taxation. You give people the opportunity. Do you want to voluntarily offset your carbon footprint? 1% of our passengers take that up. But I think a lot of those
1%.
Are... 1%. Yeah, and I suspect a lot of those are the corporate passengers where there's a corporate policy of offsetting carbon footprint. So I do think, you know, we're going to have a better, fairer, more transparent way of taxing air travel, or certainly taxing aviation fuel into the future, that on the one hand says we get back all the failed environmental taxes we now pay, ETS, APD, and all those other nonsense taxes. And I think maybe tax fuel at the point of uplift across Europe. Mm. And then you'd have a much more fair and transparent way of everybody paying their fair share.
But I can't disagree with that. And if we did that, we could sort of stop up offsetting as well, which is something of a mystery. Mm. But I'm still fascinated that people who are only paying, your average fare you said was €40, but then think somehow or other they don't need to pay anything for their carbon footprint as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have some sympathy for them. Remember, firstly, if they're transferring down to Ryanair from an Air France or a KLM or a Lufthansa, they're already reducing their carbon footprint by 50% by switching from the legacy airline to the low-cost carrier. But asking people to voluntarily pay simply doesn't work. There needs to be some reasonable but fair and transparent system of every airline passenger contributing towards their carbon footprint. The problem with the system in Europe at the moment is we exempt all the most polluting airlines and passengers, which is long-haul connecting and business-class travel. The richest people get an exemption, and the poor people, which are the people travelling point-to-point on low-fare airlines across Europe, shoulder the entire burden.
Yeah.
Manifestly unfair.
Right. So, my second last question. On social issues, Ryanair did a very good job, didn't they, of not firing staff, not even furloughing staff, unlike many of your legacy carrier colleagues. How did you do that? How did you manage to keep the staff on?
Well, I mean, two things. One, we participate in all the wage support system schemes across Europe, you know, and you know, we're very grateful for that. You know, we acknowledge that, you know, we would not have been able to survive the COVID pandemic if we hadn't received those wage support systems. But a lot of our pilots and cabin crew took a hit, you know, because they were all capped.
Mm.
But the other thing, and I think we did cleverly in Ryanair, we committed ourselves from day one, we're going to keep everybody on the payroll and current. So we kept our aircraft flying once a month, our pilots and all our cabin crew flying once a month, even if it meant setting an aircraft up with, you know, 80 or 100 pilots and cabin crew once a month to make sure everybody was current. And that's one of the reasons I think Ryanair has been so quick to recover post-COVID. We've had all the aircraft, all the pilots, all the cabin crew ready to rock and roll. And that's why we've been able to restore schedules so dramatically. And you look at most of our competitors across Europe, they've been cancelling flights because they're short of pilots. Pilots need to go back in the simulator because they were furloughed. Others, our Eastern European competitors, just sacked or let people go, particularly cabin crew. And now they're struggling to get them to come back. So I think we've been through these crises before. We knew that one of the differentiators in Ryanair was keeping our people on board. Our pilots have agreed to pay cuts of 10 to 20%. Our cabin crew agreed to pay cuts of between 5 and 10%. Management took significant pay cuts as well. So we all had to tighten our belts. And I think everybody accepts that in Ryanair, we're paying ourselves less. That was the only way to survive the pandemic. And as we emerge out of it, hopefully into the next year or two, we can restore those pay cuts. And that's our first priority, is to restore the pay cuts to our pilots and our cabin crew over the next 2 or 3 years so we get everybody back to where they were pre-COVID. But to do that, we need to get our traffic back to where it was pre-COVID, and we need to get the airfares up to where they were pre-COVID. It's fine to be carrying about 80 or 90% of our pre-COVID traffic, as we did in October, but at 30% lower airfares. That's not sustainable. You know,
so you do see airfares rising?
I think it's inevitable airfares will rise, certainly into the summer of 2022, as we emerge out of the post-COVID pandemic. There is 20% less capacity, short-haul capacity in Europe. Alitalia's gone from 110 aircraft down to 55. Thomas Cook's gone bust. Flybe has disappeared. So there is less capacity. Airfares will rise. We hope to get them back to kind of pre-pandemic levels. And the first thing we've committed is that as we restore airfares and profitability, we restore the pay of our people who've taken the pain in the last 2 years.
Right. So my last question, my standard question, any further thoughts for Eamon? Any further thoughts on what's going on?
Yeah, I would challenge Eamon and Eurocontrol. I mean, Eurocontrol are at the heart of what's going on, particularly with the NSPs. And I think they've done great work here in the last summer pre-COVID. You know, when the Karlsruhe ATC system was under real intense pressure, Eurocontrol was able to reroute flights across Polish airspace, across Italian airspace. We need more of that. I mean, I see Eurocontrol being the key to kind of the deregulation of ANSP provision across Europe. Eurocontrol should be the central provider of ATC services. It should have the freedom to contract with the French, the Germans, the Belgians. And we buy those ATC services from Eurocontrol. So, and remember, there's a huge environmental prize in this. If we could eliminate through deregulation, and I believe we will eliminate through deregulation of ANSPs, ATC delays, flight cancellations on Saturdays because of ATC capacity shortage, just because people won't turn up to work. We would eliminate about 90% of all EU airlines' flight delays. We would dramatically reduce fuel consumption on European airlines across. And I think you would have between a 10 to 20% reduction in fuel consumption and emissions of European aviation simply by effective reform of the European ATC system. It's not just a cost saving for our citizens. There's a huge environmental saving as well.
A perfect note to finish on, Michael. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Andrew.
Good to see you. Thank you for your time. My pleasure.
You too.
This episode is from our Aviation Straight Talk Live series, bringing you exclusive insights from aviation leaders across the world.